Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
He'd be there purring away at me, and then all of a sudden he'd go.
Hello and welcome. This is episode 11 of the Paul Ryder Tapes, where Paul Ryder, founding member and bass player from Manchester Legends Happy Mondays, sat down with me, his ex-wife Angela Smith, to tell his complete life story, which we finished recording just 12 days before he died. I know everyone's blown away by his honesty, but there's much more to come, I promise. Coming up in this episode...
And 7 months later, I was pregnant with Sonny.
Oh, what a love story.
I know, it was weird, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, fuck our kids' movie, ours is bad.
That image of me on a riser playing with the Mondays and looking down, and he's looking at me and he's going, trying to point at me, he's going, do you want one? And he's like we're in a bar.
The moment Sean watched the Doors movie, that's when Sean changed. He thought he was Jim Morrison.
And the pair of them, had terrible addictions at the time, you know what I mean? Which, no clouds, everyone's judgment.
Marilyn Manson went, and his swimming goggles went as well.
We're not accusing.
Me and Paul are convinced to this day. Paul said, it's that Manson, I'm going to find him, get his goggles back.
I bumped into Simon Moran, who's from SJM Concerts, probably the biggest concert promoter in Europe. And he said, how do you feel about getting the band back together and doing a tour? That was how the approach happened.
So what did you say when he said that? And what did you think? Where did your mind go with that?
My mind went straight to, will anyone turn up and watch us?
Oh, you'd lost your confidence.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Are you sure you want to do this, Simon? You're going to lose a lot of money. You know, and we ended up playing the MEN Arena in Manchester.
So he said, how do you feel about getting the band back together? You said, yes, I'd be interested.
And this was 1999, and you hadn't played together as a band for, 6 years.
Yeah, phoned Sean, said, I bumped into Simon Moran, he wants to get the band back together. What are you thinking? And his reaction was, yeah, great, but we're not having Mark Day or Paul Davis. So, which was kind of not cool, really.
No.
Like everyone else, Mark had a hard time when the band first split.
Oh, fuming. Yeah. They used to have plasticine dummies on the wall and used to throw knives at it.
Yeah.
It wasn't good, was it? Because... me personally, I'd just bought an house, got kids on the way, and interest rates were 30%. Well, it was a plane crash, wasn't it? And so I had to find a job, so I was fucked. It was either bankruptcy or too late to start a band, because it takes years to start a band again. It's not an income thing that comes straight in. So, yeah, I just drank too much. you know. But there was one good thing that came out of that. I saw my kids grow up. I got a job, got back into the system, became an entrepreneur selling crap to people that didn't need it. But I had to sort of face my fear and do it anyway. I had to earn money. Oh, it's either that or go bankrupt and just, you know, you've got to do what you've got to do for your family. And I did that for 15 years then. I stopped playing. I didn't play for 17 years. I put my guitars in the loft. I just forgot about music. I didn't do anything. I just hated it. It left a really bad taste in my mouth, you know, and I didn't want to get involved. So I didn't listen. I didn't care.
And Bez too was devastated when the split had happened.
The pair of us. No, I had terrible addictions at the time, you know what I mean? Which, no, clouds everyone's judgment, you know what I mean? Me and Charlotte, I always thought it was a terrible mistake by the rest of the band, you know what I mean? They should have stuck on, because we fought tooth and nail to keep that band together at the time. The frustrating thing for me was how nobody could see what they'd got, you know what I mean? And couldn't see beyond the fucking that moment, you know what I mean? And it was madness, like, fucking hell, we're in a fucking massive band, fucking world, no right round the world. What is it? You know, what, fucking hell, you should be fucking really happy, you know what I mean? And that's what used to do me head in, because, you know, fucking, I was loving it, mate. I fucking, like, buzzing me fucking socks off. And I couldn't understand why, you know, everybody else wouldn't be in the same, you know, felt the same about it all.
So we ended up doing it with Wags from the Paris Angels on guitar, who went on to write a lot of the Black Grape stuff, and Ben Leach from The Farm, who was their keyboard player. Mm-hmm. So we did like a football transfer from Liverpool to Manchester.
So in 1999 was the first reunion after that, wasn't it, when Simon Moran got the band back together?
Well, I can't really remember, to be truthful, on that. And at the time, I think I might have been treating it as like a smash and grab, you know what I mean? I really didn't give a fuck, because I didn't see anything here. I thought, I wasn't going to join at first, you know what I mean, go back. My heart wasn't really into the thing, you know what I mean? Because, I felt like, you know, We still hadn't really made friends either from the breakup either, you know what I mean? And it felt like a smash and grab, you know what I mean? And like I say, it's a funny thing, but I'm glad we did it anyway, you know what I mean? And it got the band, you know, sort of back on track. But I can't remember how many times we split up as a band now. I've lost count and reformed, you know what I mean?
Paul was worried that going back on tour with the band would put his newfound freedom from using drugs at risk, so he enlisted the help of his friend Dave.
Paul went back and he said, I can't, I don't think I can do that. But from what I know, the rest of them said, well, it's not going to happen if Paul's not going to do it. The issue was whether going on tour, there would be temptations for him to get through the tour. So he asked me to go along just to make sure that it stayed on the straight and narrow. And we ended up going on tour, and my job was really to keep him away from Sean, to keep him away from, to make sure the door was locked so nobody knocked on his door, you know, trying to lead him astray at the night. And that was pretty much my role there.
And how good was he at staying on the straight and narrow? Did he test you much?
Well, the other people thought, well, you know, this is what Paul's here, so, you know, it's going to be how it was. And I think I maybe naively thought, he's only going to do it if he can do it, you know, straight. He's been through so much shit, he's not going to go back there. But then I kind of thought, well, is that realistic to think that?
Dave's wife, Maureen, wasn't optimistic.
I think that he probably genuinely thought he would have been able, that he could do it. He's not really ever been a person that was particularly resilient in terms of those temptations. And I can just imagine the pressure of, because it was the first real big comeback, wasn't it, with the whole original, well, it's mostly the original lineup there. And that was a massive, massive test.
I think at the time, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think he was still drinking at the time to stop him from taking drugs. Yeah. Subsequently, he learned that you can't really drink if you're a drug addict. And I think that was part of what the battle was for him, was that he was still drinking a massive amount and thought that was okay as long as he didn't pick up drugs.
Paul and Sean's mum, Linda, reminded Gaz's mum, Sandra, that she had a special tool that she could consult to find out how successful the tour was going to be.
You've got a crystal ball.
I've got a crystal ball.
You have, haven't you?
Yeah.
You came to my kitchen in Worsley. Do you not remember?
Oh, did we? Yes, yeah. I remember. You said I don't remember.
I do.
You said I don't remember when I said to you when we did that.
I did.
When Angela said to me, I don't remember that. She's daft. She'd probably have too many vodkas.
Not.
And then there was Lee Mullen as well, wasn't there?
And Lee Mullen, we had Lee on percussion, which is great. Lee's a great percussion player. Went on to do George Michael stuff.
I first met Paul on my audition for the Happy Mondays.
Tracy bought you a crystal ball, didn't she?
Oh, yeah, she did.
And she charges it up.
Oh, it's lovely. It's a good ornament.
And it would have been in 99, that would have been. So that would have been, there would have been a room with in Greenhouse Studios with myself, Paul, Ben Leach, the MD, and Gary Whelan.
She charges it up, though, don't you, in the garden?
Yes. No, why do we have to charge it up? It's not electric. It's just glass.
I already knew Gaz, anyway. I had a... Because I'd done some recording with a band that Gaz was involved in called Delicious previously.
You tell me you had to charge it up.
I don't know where you get some of these things from.
And so I already knew Gaz, and Gaz thought it'd be a good idea for me to come down and have an audition because they were talking about using a percussionist from London. And he wanted me to come down and meet Ben. And Paul turned up, so it was like a rhythm section rehearsal.
It's not electric, so you plug it in.
No, I know it's
beautiful.
Not.
Oh, it's lovely. Oh, I would have charged it up in the garden.
I don't know, but you told me you had to leave it in the garden.
Perhaps it was to get the moon on it or something. I don't know. I've never done. Oh, the sun. Could be the sun charging it up. That's where you got confused.
What, like a solar?
Yeah, to get it hot.
And we didn't really play very many of the sort of Happy Mondays songs, I remember. I think we just jammed. Paul made me feel very easy very quickly.
And when I talk to it, man, nothing ever happens. But when I talk to it, I feel better. Oh.
And after us playing for maybe around 40 minutes or something, he said, right, welcome to the family. He said, that's it. He said, he said, which made it, even before Ben said it, he said, you're in the band. You're lead percussion in the band.
Sometimes I talk to it and it's nice. And if I want something, I'll go, are you there?
You're joking.
Why? Well, I'm asking, is it there? Might not be there. Might be anywhere, mightn't it? You've got to ask, haven't you? So, are you there? Nobody ever answers me. If somebody did, I'd throw it in the bin.
And then there was Nuts.
Oh, Nuts. our kid's protege, Nuts. Nuts is a rapper, he's a programmer, he's an entertainer, he's a singer, he can do anything. He was really bigging up Nuts to come to rehearsals. And Nuts arrived at rehearsals and it was like, OK, what are you going to do? He's got a speaking part on the record we brought out in 99, The Boys Are Back in Town.
Right. Rowetta was there too in this incarnation, wasn't she, the band?
Oh.
Yeah, she was.
Yeah, she must have been. She must have been, yeah, 99. Yeah, Rowetta was there.
So go on, so the first thing that you did then was record a single.
Simon got us a great deal, just on a single deal, with I think it was with London. It must have been with London, and they put that out, and that was a hit. You know, we did Top of the Pops again.
It was a Thin Lizzy cover.
Thin Lizzy was. I think we spoke about Thin Lizzy earlier. One of my go-to bands when I was 14, 13. No, it was a Thin Lizzy cover.
But to me, I actually didn't realise that it was a cover version. It's so, so different from the original version of the song. It's almost like a brand new song.
Yeah, that's why I like doing cover versions, because you can you can get the inspiration from them, but turn it into something new.
Yeah, the worst cover versions are when they're just like trying copies. To be replicas.
Yeah.
Yeah. But this was really... I can remember hearing it several times and not realising that it was a Thin Lizzy song.
Yeah, that's it. That's
even the chorus, like, it wasn't the same melody or anything. It was completely different.
No, it was inspired by Thin Lizzy's version.
Yeah, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what was it like when you first went back into the studio after not being... How many years had gone by at this point? We're in 1999. You'd originally split in, what, 93-ish, 94? Ooh. Had you been off for about 5 years?
Yeah. We went back in with the Oakenfold and Osborne.
Right.
They did The Boys Are Back in Town.
Oh, OK.
And it was great. We was at this residential studio, you know, because you was there. It was a nice residential studio with meals at certain times, and it was all plush and cool and groovy.
Yeah.
And we had Oakenfold and Osborne again.
Rowetta had a bit of a disaster soon after she arrived there.
I left my cigs in the hut bit where I think we had something to eat, went back into the studio, and I went back to go and get my cigs, and I stepped into the, they call it a pond, but it was a lake. It was a lake that I thought was a path, and my leather jacket that I'd got when I was with Horse in a TK Maxx type shop got drowned full of duck shit.
So how did it feel when you first met up with everybody again? I mean, obviously not Mark and PD, but there was Gaz, there was Rowetta, Sean. Mm-hmm. What was that like?
That was all great. Everyone was getting on quite well. Mm-hmm. Everyone was getting on really well. Studio session was great until Sean brought his mate down who robbed everybody's rooms.
I remember that.
Yeah, it kind of sent a bad vibe across the across the whole thing. We had to send him off back to Manchester.
Yeah.
Paul Oakenfold, who was producing the single with Steve Osborne, was absolutely furious.
I was in the Real World studio, Peter Gabriel's studio. So excited to go down there. It's a residential studio. And we were recording, and then Steve came to me and said that a bunch of his belongings have gone missing. And I'm like, what are you talking about? I checked the whole room, stuff has been stolen, wallet, money, and the band were there, the band's entourage were there. And then I pulled Sean to the side and I was like, listen, we got a problem here. Unless this wallet and money is put back within the next hour, we're walking and I'm never going to work with you guys again. You don't fucking do that. That is disrespectful, rude, and who fucking steals anyway? I mean, you know, I mean, where's your head at? Yeah. And let alone the producers who...
Making the album, yeah.
Really? Is that where we're at now? Have we got this low that we're doing this? So I'm like, I'm out of here, man. I said, Steve, we're going. It got resolved.
Yeah.
It got resolved. It was put back where what was stolen was put back, and it certainly wasn't the band. And it wasn't, you know, and I'm sure it was embarrassing for them as much as it was.
I remember it.
For us. And it just left a bad taste. Mm. And that killed the vibe.
He robbed Paul Oakenfold's credit card, but it was on CCTV. So that then Paul Oakenfold was going, the vibe's gone, the vibe, and the vibe had gone.
It was over then. Even when we were trying to do it, it was like, oh, fuck it, man.
Can't blame it on why the record wasn't brilliant. I did enjoy the dirty version where Sean just ranting.
I don't want to be here. I don't want to sit around and be around these guys.
You get 10 fucking goals, and I get one because he's a drummer. You get bum, tit, tit, and he gets loads. Pay the Willy Banjo.
They got rid of the guy that did it, though, I think. They kicked him out.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
And so they should have.
Mm.
He should never have been there, and it should have just been us.
And the band.
And the band.
Did you go there? I remember Horse was just quiet.
Yeah, we just got back together at that point. Oh. Yeah.
So it was lovely because we got back to do something. But I don't think the record was great or anything. But
I love that record.
I don't know, like the don't know. It's, and you know as well, because when we did Top of the Pops, it was terrible because we did it live, which I don't think we were the, for Top of the Pops. We thought it was a rehearsal because it was so bad, the rehearsal, and with nuts in as well, it wasn't very good. But because it was a rehearsal and everyone wasn't really trying very hard, it was just messy and they kept it in. The new producer at Top of the Pops thought it'd be cool to just do this, everyone going wrong, everyone coming in at the wrong time. And if you watch it now, it's just awful. It's just a horrible. So I think that was a problem. And I always thought the dirty version was more Happy Mondays. The other version sounds a bit novelty. Guess who's just come back to... It's a bit novelty. The boys, right. But we did it on TFI Friday, who did it well.
Yeah, I loved your bits in that song. I mean, that was...
And the voodoo, I've been voodooed with Bez did. Ooh. Yeah. So yeah, the boys are back. But it was just a thought Sean's was a little bit novelty. Sean's... Yeah. I like the dirty version, as I said, but the... Yeah, it was just down the Reno, smoke and chill ya. That it was a little bit too... I don't know. Yeah, a little bit.
I
know
what you mean, but I didn't even realise it was a cover version until like a year later.
Oh, no, because I love the original as well. That's another reason why I just thought we could have done it more dirty, more messy, more rocky, more punky. Yeah. It was a little bit too pop, and I think it had gone from Step On to really pop. It had gone really poppy, like Busted. Right. It was a bit too, not right. Busted, but one of them kind of bands for me. Yeah. And I don't know why it did. But I do think it... did affect you when Paul talked about that crowd and everything, the vibe.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
That was strange. So also during this period, that was when we met up again, wasn't it?
We met up again, yeah.
You'd just reformed, or it had just been announced in the press that the Mondays were reforming, and I'd just started a production company.
Right.
So I remember I had the phone number of your dad because he'd been the tour manager in Iceland.
Yeah, yeah.
And Factory were no more, so I couldn't call Factory.
Mm-hmm.
So the only number I thought to call was your dad's number.
Mm-hmm. His landline.
His home number in Manchester.
Which they still have.
I know, but it's still your mum's number, isn't it?
Yeah, 40-odd years later.
Yeah, you won't say what it is.
No.
And I remember phoning, and it went onto the answering machine and leaving a message saying... Mm-hmm. Angela Smith here, you might remember me from Iceland. It was 9 years before
that
I'd met you in Iceland. And I said, I'm just wondering who the new manager of the Mondays is, because I'd just set up a production company. I thought it'd be a really good behind-the-scenes documentary to follow the process of you trying to get everything together to do a show. I thought left this message, and then I got home that night. I must have given my home number.
You must have.
Because you phoned me up.
Yeah.
And I had no idea you were living back at your mum's and dad's at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, oh, has it really been 9 years?
Oh, my God.
Do you remember when we had that conversation? We were on the phone for like 3 hours.
3 hours, yeah.
And you said to me, what are you doing this weekend? And I said, I'm going to Thailand, actually, for work.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And you said, well, when are you going? I said, Saturday. He said, well, what are you doing Friday? Mm-hmm. And I said nothing, and you said, can I come down to see you on Friday night?
Yeah, yeah.
I was like, yeah, all right then.
Yeah.
And
I just bought my new Volvo with pop-up headlights.
I remember that car.
Yeah, yeah. We've been paid. Suddenly I had money back in my bank account, and it's like, oh, it's time to get a new car. And I went to see this car, and the guy had fitted an extra ashtray I thought, this is great. I've got two ashtrays. I've got to buy this car. So I bought it because it had an extra ashtray fitted in there.
Funny. So you drove down to London. I think it was like the next day.
The next day, yeah.
And you brought a bottle of champagne.
Yeah, so did you.
Yeah. So we went to the pub and then you came back to my house and you said to me, I want to marry you and have babies with you.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right then.
Yeah, can we have a white picket fence and chickens?
Yeah. And it was that easy, wasn't it?
And it was like, yeah, okay.
Yeah,
we'll have a white. We'll get married. We'll have a white picket fence and chickens.
Yeah, and babies.
And babies. Yeah, don't forget the babies.
Yeah, and then I remember going to Iceland the next... Not Iceland.
Thailand.
Thailand the next day.
Yeah.
And seeing my friend Darren there, who also happened to be in Thailand, and we were staying at the same place. I remember saying to him, do you think I should get pregnant straight away? Or do you think I should wait? Seriously, I did.
I do remember when he first met you and came back and he said he'd really fallen for this girl. I was like, because he was really wanting a girlfriend. And I don't think he thought he'd get a girlfriend, like you don't. But I just don't think he did think he'd get one because his marriage had split up and everything. And I remember him being really besotted with you when he came back. They'd met this girl who worked for MTV. And I remember me and Sean came and stayed at your house, actually, in Islington.
And 7 months later, I was pregnant with Sonny.
Oh, what a love story.
I know, it was weird, wasn't it?
Yeah, fuck our kids' movie, ours is better.
And I remember when I got back, you met me at the airport and you had a Lacoste dress in a box for me.
Oh.
It's a present. Very smooth.
Yeah, I was a smooth operator.
You were. So when I had the champagne and you had the champagne, obviously I knew nothing about the intervening years. I knew you were back at your mum and dad's, but...
Mm-hmm.
And I knew... I think you told me you'd had a nervous breakdown, but I had no idea you were a heroin addict.
No.
Or an alcoholic.
No.
I learned pretty fast, though.
Yeah.
It didn't take me long to realise. I remember when I got back from Thailand, you were there... And when we woke up in the morning, you were like, I'm just nipping over to the pub.
Oh, it was great. You had a pub
across
the street facing your house. Yeah. I thought, this is great. Pub right across the road.
I was like, it's a bit early to start with beer.
Yeah.
And then we went for a meal with Laura and Ben, the keyboard player, who I'd helped fixed up with my friend Laura, who I worked at MTV with, who'd come to Iceland with
That's
us.
That's right, yeah.
She started being in a relationship with Ben, and the four of us went for a dinner to a restaurant just down the street.
I remember, yeah.
And you drank so much Sambuca, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Do you remember that?
I was very, very sick.
And you were so sick, you had to have a bucket by the bed because you were throwing up, and I thought, I think he drinks too much.
That was a shape of things to come.
Yeah, I didn't really know much about alcoholism at that point. I thought you just liked a pint, like we all did.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, I know you weren't doing any drugs.
No.
And if I'd thought that you were, would have been scared off, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
It was about 4 months later when I finally realised that something was wrong. Mm. But by that point, I was in it.
You were just in it.
And I didn't know anything about how to deal with an addict.
Do I apologise right now? I'm sure I've apologised on a million occasions.
Well, it wasn't your fault, really, was it?
No.
I have to take responsibility. I was the one that put myself in that position and didn't walk away.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm glad I didn't walk... With hindsight now, like I said before, all of the adversity we go through makes us what we are now, and without that, you don't grow and learn, do you?
No.
So
where are we right now? We're in Los Angeles, right? Just down the road from Hollywood.
Yeah.
It's winter.
Yeah.
Although it's spring in a couple of days. It's winter, and it's like 80-odd degrees outside.
There's not a cloud in the sky.
Yellow. And we're sitting here chatting about it many years later. 23 years later.
Yeah.
And life couldn't be better.
Yeah.
For me, personally. Yeah. And for you, I know.
Yeah. Yeah. What?
Let's stop. That was another half hour. Surely it must have been. That's a cliffhanger. I want to go home now.
All right. I suppose you can.
Fuck. Whew. Oh, it's getting deep.
good.
It's good. I like it. I'd listen to it.
It's good, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd listen to it.
Hello again.
Hi.
We're back. Are you ready for this?
Not really, but let's do it.
Okay, so what I decided to do, because there's been a lot of controversy about things that have been said in various books.
Oh, God, yeah.
I decided that it might be a good idea to read some of the books.
Okay.
But I haven't had a chance yet to read the books, so one of them I just picked up and opened a page randomly.
Uh-huh.
And I read this bit, and I'm like, I'm going to have to read this to you, because it relates to what we were talking about last time about Barbados.
Right.
And I think if I read it to you, you'll have quite a strong reaction.
Oh, my God.
So are you ready?
I'm ready. Yeah, yeah. I've never read any of these books. I flicked through them like you did and just opened up random pages and had to put them down because it was just full of shit.
Yeah, okay. I mean,
go on.
So this is the book, Hallelujah, The Extraordinary Story of Sean Ryder and Happy Mondays by John Warburton with Sean Ryder.
Oh, okay.
So I've opened it on page... I've opened it randomly on page 36.
Uh-huh.
And it's talking about Barbados, and right. It quotes Tony Wilson, dear soul. So I'm just going to read you a little bit here.
Mm-hmm.
So this isn't Tony talking yet. This is the book talking, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so we're not allowed to use me reading the actual words from the book for copyright reasons, but the gist of what I was reading to Paul was the book claiming that drugs weren't the only thing trashing the Mondays at that time, and that when they got to Barbados, the band's attitude had changed due to their success and the media. It then quoted Tony Wilson saying, effectively, that one of the reasons Sean went off the rails was that he'd had his group for 8 years, and that when Sean was doing his normal thing of directing the musicians, that all the musicians stopped taking their lead from Sean because they all thought that they were big and famous in their own right. I knew this would incense Paul. Oh, and it did make Paul angry.
Oh, my God, I've never heard such bullshit in my life.
So, correct that, then. What's the truth?
The truth is, the only one that got a massive ego was our kid.
And your kid is?
Sean.
Right.
I always say when he started to believe his own press, that's when he changed. You know, he became a model in Penthouse in a bath full of bubbles with naked ladies, you know. And Gary Whelan always says, the moment Sean watched the Doors movie, the Oliver Stone Doors right. movie, that's when Sean changed. He thought he was Jim Morrison.
Right.
And he grew his ego and he believed his own press.
But
taking a lead from Sean on the music never, ever, ever happened. And it never will. Sean sang to the music we gave him. And it's as simple as that.
But obviously Tony Wilson
said that. Because Sean's such a... When you're in his presence, he's such a believable person. Because he's an extrovert.
Right, so...
And Tony believed it. Poor, bless his soul, Tony believed him.
Right.
What an absolute load of bollocks, taking a lead off Sean. Never. Never in my fucking life.
OK. Gaz Whelan, the Mondays drummer, clarifies even further the Mondays dynamic back in those days.
From the band starting, he was always Paul's band, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And I think... When you become successful, if you're the bass player, it doesn't become your band anymore, you know. And that's just the way it is, you know. And it's a difficult situation. I think that he kind of lost control. And he wasn't controlling, but he was his band, and he just kind of led by example and just guidance. He wasn't a tyrant or anything, but as you know, he's... Paul's not a tyrant. He couldn't be bothered for a star, you know. He couldn't be arsed. He had the energy to be a tyrant. No, but he kind of lost that kind of the direction of thing. And I think when fame happens, and I don't think he didn't want fame. I think he wanted recognition. Yeah. And I think he's got it posthumously, but I wish he'd have got it, you know. And I think, but though he'd been deeply embarrassed about it, you know, wouldn't have been able to deal with it.
It was very frustrating to think that Paul was such a good musician and yet he didn't seem to get the recognition that he should have got.
Communication-wise, we did the music and Sean did the lyrics and singing, and I look back and I think, well, he must have felt as an outsider.
So we put that one to...
We could sit here for the next 52 weeks, for 52 weeks, an hour at a time, putting these books to bed.
OK, well, I'm going to read the rest of them.
Yeah,
and
please
I think I have a pretty good idea of what's true and what isn't, but I'll check with you and we'll put a few more things.
Yeah, you've known me a very long time. You know what the truth is.
Yeah, I've known you... Well, originally I met you in 1990, so I've known you for 32 years.
Right, OK, so you've got a good idea of what went on.
Yeah, I think I have a good idea. And I did witness a lot of it as well.
Yeah, I think that's why you're good at getting stories out of me, because I wouldn't tell them to anyone else.
And I know all the secrets.
Yeah. But taking the lead off Sean as musical director, what a crock of shit. That one makes me angry.
Yeah.
That one makes me really pissed off.
I knew it would.
And really pissed off because Tony's dead and he didn't know the truth.
You tried to tell him, though, a couple of times, didn't you?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But I'm not a powerful force like Sean. I think I'm a bit more laid back.
Right, absolutely, you are. Back.
Yeah, I ain't Mr. Angry, although that made me angry.
So you recorded that new single, and then you did Top of the Pops, and then Simon Moran set up a huge UK tour, didn't he?
I didn't think anyone would turn up.
Right.
And he was saying, no, we'll do the Manchester Evening News Arena. Yeah. And it was like, Simon, you're off your head. No one's going to turn you. You know, God bless him. He was right.
Yeah.
And we would have had lots of photos of that Manchester gig to show you if Paul's mum, Linda, hadn't had a bit of a calamity with her phone.
I've lost loads of photographs twice. One when I chopped my phone in half in the car door, shutting the car door. And the last time when
like
I dropped...
you?
You still in touch with Simon now?
I saw him... on the James tour we've just done, saw him in Manchester. It was great to see him, yeah. He was really jovial and happy that we was there. And it was really nice to see him.
The last time when I dropped it down the toilet and couldn't, rescue any, I've lost loads of photographs.
So the 1999 tour, so there must have been a moment when you all met for the first time. Can you remember what that was like?
Yeah, in the... Oh, no, not for that one, not 99. Because 99 we had Wags on guitar instead of Mark Day.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Ben Leach.
Ben Leach on keyboards from the farm. And our kids made nuts.
So you don't remember when you first went to rehearsals for that tour?
We started rehearsing in the greenhouse in Stockport. In a little, one of the small rooms that they had there. And I just remember pieces of A4 paper on the wall next to me with notes and cues on what I had to do and where I had to do it. Because, I think it had been 6 years since we played. So, started rehearsing in a small room in the greenhouse.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't remember meeting for the first time.
Gaz Whelan, the Mondays drummer, is also a little hazy about those times.
I remember being in the studio and recreating all the songs with Ben Leach. Me and Paul sat around the computer with Ben and programming all the...
Lee Mullen as well was involved, wasn't he?
And Lee Mullen percussion, that's all I remember. I don't really remember anything else about bad times. I remember recreating all the backing tracks, spending a month in the studio just doing that with Ben, with Posh Scouse.
Yeah. So you'd kept in touch with Gaz, you'd seen him regularly over the intervening period. Had you kept in touch with Bez also?
I didn't keep in touch with anyone, just Gaz, really. Yeah.
So what was the mood like when you were rehearsing for that tour? Was everybody, like, super nervous? What was it like?
I was nervous because Mark Day wasn't there and I was worried whether Wags could pull it off. Mm-hmm. But Wags is an amazing guitar player. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of Black Grape stuff was down to Wags. Mm-hmm. And he pulled it off nicely. So I was nervous about that at first, but once he got going, once we started rehearsing and I knew he could do the parts, it was like, okay, this is going to be good. Mm-hmm. And he was good. Mm-hmm. You know, even though I missed PD and Gaz. I mean, PD and Mark. Mm-hmm. I missed them both. But we pulled it off nicely.
Did you ever put pressure on everybody else to let them do that tour?
Not really. I was still angry at Mark and PD for fanning out on me and our kid, which is what they did.
Do you understand why they did that now?
Yeah, of course I do. Many years later, yeah, I do.
Mm-hmm. And you forgive them now? For
yeah.
That?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. They put up with a lot.
Yeah.
You know, putting up with Sean just on his own is a lot.
Yeah.
You know. And they had not 8 years. It was a good. What did Tony say? Sean's band had been going 8 years. I think it was a lot longer than that, and it wasn't Sean's band.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can I have a smoke?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, so the 1999 tour.
I was just about to say, I don't remember much about it because I was definitely back drinking.
And Lee Mullen, the Mondays percussion player from those days, definitely remembers that.
One of the funniest things with Paul was, I've never seen, was when he actually, because Martin Herbert was his tech, and he told me one day, he said, Paul's going to have a keg at the side of his Ampeg stack. And I said, what? So he said, he's going to have a Stella keg. And I went, what for? And he said, because so he can pull his own pints in between the songs. And I was like, I don't believe you. And honestly, that image of me on a riser playing with the Mondays and looking down, and him pointing at me, and we're trying to start a song. I think we're trying to start Kinky Afro or something. And he's looking at me, and he's going, trying to point at me, and he's going, do you want one? And he's like, we're in a bar. And we're playing somewhere like in Glasgow, you know, at the arena. And he's going, and he's like, hang on a minute, I'm just pouring a pint. And he's like, just making sure the head went on properly. It was hilarious, honestly. It's so funny.
And Paul's idea of having his friend Dave on the tour to help keep him on the straight and narrow, sadly, didn't quite go according to plan.
It was about partway through the tour and I was trying to ring David and not answering the phone for a couple of days, which is not typical, is not at all unusual. And I was getting myself really worked up in a sort of a hormonal frenzy, I suppose. You need to get home now. I don't care what you're doing. I don't care about. You need to get home now. And you just sort of dropped everything and came along, didn't you?
Yeah, Paul said to me, what was that about? I said, I have no idea. It's just most going bananas. And he said, why? I said, I don't know. She just said, I've got to go home. Yeah, what do you mean you've got to go home? He said, you're supposed to be here for another 2 weeks. And I said, I don't know, but she sounded like she meant it. And so I said, look, I'm just going to have to go. And I went back and then found out the news that Maureen's pregnant.
So Paul made the most of his freedom from Dave's watchful eye and hit the drink in a big way.
Yeah, I have loads of great days. Lots of things that I probably couldn't say. I mean, this is where I met you, when we were on tour with the Mondays.
Tell me, I don't really know.
I met you when we were on tour with the Mondays because Paul said, this is my new partner, Angela. This is my new bird. And he said, she's coming on tour with us. So I remember us hiring, you know, when we were flying out to, we'd have a chartered flight, you know, we'd have like a plane where they'd hire a plane in for us and we'd fly out to Belfast to do a show. And when everybody would come on, just pile on the plane. It was like, it was ridiculous. I remember being in Norway. We did a festival in Norway, Kristiansand Festival. And we went on there and somebody had, as soon as we'd gone on there, I think somebody had give Paul a V. He'd put two fingers up to Paul or something, and it was like spoilt the whole gig for him. And he just wanted to fight him. And he was like, all the way through the gig, we started every song, and he was pointing at this person, and he had his bass, and he was going, after the gig, and I've never seen, honestly, we did like an hour set, and he ran off the stage, and the security followed him. I don't know ever what happened on that, but I've never seen somebody so upset as well. He was, and I said, what did, he came up afterwards, I said, what happened? He said he disrespected me. He said he put the V's up as soon as I walked on stage. He decided he didn't like me. He said, I don't know who he is. And then on that same garbage were on with us, and on the same, we went backstage. And Paul just decided that he wanted a food fight, and we're in catering backstage. And honestly, it was like something out of a Western. It was just, food was flying everywhere. It was ridiculous. That was backstage at a festival, and Paul started that. I don't mind saying that, and I don't know he won't mind me saying that.
I was probably using again.
No, you definitely were using
okay.
again.
Okay, thanks for the memory. Probably drinking out of nervousness, whether we was going to pull it off or not. I do remember that we did pull it off, and all the shows were fucking great.
Yeah.
But as for incidentals, I've no idea.
Dave has fond memories of an incident that happened just before he was called home by Maureen.
Me and Mo were talking about this the other day because Maureen found a photograph of Paul and he's got my blue swimming goggles on. And we went to the Leeds Festival and we're in the backstage area and there's a big marquee where obviously the artists go to have something to eat. And me and Paul went in there, and there was only me and Paul in, and we were just helping out. Paul wasn't even playing. You know, we just let people on the door knew him, we just walked in. Also, what have you got in your bag there? Because I had my rucksack, because, you know, I always carry my rucksack with me. So I said, I don't know, and I looked in it. I happened to have my blue swimming goggles in, and Paul goes, oh, then, mega then, mega, let's have a go. I said, have a go. And he goes, yeah, yeah, yeah. And he put these blue swimming goggles on. And this bloke comes across and he sits, there's these long benches, and he sits there and he's looking across at Paul and laughing and, you know, giggling the fact that Paul's got these glasses on and everything. And it was Marilyn Manson. Paul took the goggles off and we went to the stage to watch someone. And we'd only been gone 2 or 3 minutes and I said, oh, left me swimming goggles in the marquee. So I said, just wait there, I'll just go back and get them. Anyway, got back and my swimming goggles had gone. So I went to the woman who served us and said, excuse me, I said, did you find any swimming goggles on the bench? And she went, no, no. And I said, are you sure? Because I left them on there. I said, there was someone sat, and she said, well, he left a few minutes after you. And so Marilyn Manson went, and my swimming goggles went as well. Paul said, it's that Manson, I'm going to find him, get your goggles back.
Lee Mullen, the Mondays percussion player from those days, was devastated when he found out Paul had passed away.
Paul was always probably the best dressed in the Happy Mondays, without a doubt. He was always, like, unbelievable. We'd come to rehearsal and he'd have a new jacket on or a new pair of shoes that he bought that morning. You know, he always looked really smart. And I was always saying to him, where'd you get that? Where'd you get that? I always saw a professional side of him. And he was always, everything he ever said that he was going to do, with me involved in it, he did. So he was always, you know, he was always, very, very courteous. And he was always very professional. And he was a friend. I considered him as a dear friend. You know, and he was somebody musically who I always had a good time on stage with. I never had a bad experience with him. He never, ever had a bad word about anybody. And that just shows you the quality. And that's how I'd like to remember him. Of a great, really nice person, great musician, had great ideas. And it's and he's going to be really sadly missed by everybody.
Coming up on the next episode.
He said, don't buy that. You'll hate it.
It's a terrible house.
It's a terrible house. And we found out the guy that owned it used to have sex parties there. He was like, we definitely got to have this house.
Horrible arguments. Horrible things being said while we were on stage. It wasn't a nice place to be in our band, I didn't think, 99, really.
The cop car came along and I said, shoot the cops.
Shoot the cops!
Like, shoot them as in film them.
We nearly got arrested.
Yeah. Don't shout shoot the cops loud in New York.
That was all over the papers.
Yeah.
When we did the later gigs, like at Murrayfield and a few of the other gigs, they would ban, the production would ban any of Liam coming anywhere near our dressing room.
People had paid this girl, who was a lady of the night, and she ended up in my room, falling asleep. So I took the money back out of the purse. I don't think it was a good idea because we could have got thrown in jail, actually. Robbery.
If you want to hear even more talk about Paul and the Mondays, tune into my old MTV friend and colleague Steve Blame's fab podcast, Pop, The History Makers, where he talks to me about the making of the Paul Ryder tapes. You may remember Steve Blame. He was a host on MTV Europe, and he was the one that suffered in an interview with Sean and Bez in 1990 in front of a jukebox where they were totally off their trees. Steve told me that he'd blanked that interview out of his mind, but go and have a look at it on YouTube. It is worth a watch. Anyway, Steve loved the band and he was interested in going further into my story with Paul. So you can hear all about it. So it's called Pop, The History Makers. Here's a little clip.
It's not like a friend where a friend pisses you off and you decide you don't want to be friends with that person anymore. So you cut them out of your life. You couldn't do that with Sean. There was still this bond. And it was a blood bond, I guess. He wasn't able to just cut him out and move on. There was always this thread of connection.
But you say it was a blood bond as a sort of reason, but you can detach from your family. You can say they aren't doing me any good, so I'm going to detach. Yeah.
We're playing out with a sneak preview of a fab track from Gaz Whelan's solo project, Love and the Family Tree. It's called The Ballad of David Bowie. It features none other than Paul Ryder on bass, and it'll be released in January. And Gaz actually sings on this track. Who knew he had a great voice? Big thanks to Mark Musgrove and Mike Thomas for joining our special patrons club and supporting the show. Please join us as a founding member. We've got lots of great perks planned. Go to patreon.com/thePaulRyderTapes for all the details. Please spread the word about the series and go to the website paulryder.tv for links to our socials and our shop with some great merch. We'll be back next week, same time, same place, 9 p.m. UK time and 1 p.m. Pacific time. Thanks to all our guests and thank you to you for being here and listening. We really appreciate you more than you know. And finally, of course, the biggest thanks has got to go to the absolute star of the show, the late, great Paul Anthony Ryder.
Where he had his ball.
His what?
you know, it's getting terrible. I'll have a drink because it's going terrible, this. Can't go with this.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.